From London, we present Geraldine McEwan in Trials of Fidelity by Miklos Jarfasz, translated from the Hungarian by Laszlo Andrasz. Trials of Fidelity.
Zoom. Zoom. The plane took off an hour ago. John will touch down in Stockholm in 30 minutes precisely. Ooh. Another architect's conference. Isn't he lucky? Oh, well, I've no cause to complain, I suppose. I'm alone in the flat, face down on the couch. I'm alone. Alone in my hometown, Budapest. Alone. I can do whatever I like. Strange, it never occurs to me that he might have an accident or something during the journey. With John, disasters are completely out of character. His plane's certain to be on time. It always is. Ever since I've known him, he's done everything he wanted to do. He's always maddeningly successful. He's even made a success out of me. I married him 18 years ago. And during all those 18 years, I've been faithful. I don't know another woman, not a single one, who would have been faithful to her husband the way I have. But if there has been one, I'm sure she must have cracked up in the effort. I just can't stop patting myself on the back. Faithful for 18 years. Amazing. Not that there haven't been men. There have been plenty who wanted to lead me off from my journey. Oh, yes. Plenty.
Hey there!
Help!
Keep quiet, will you? Swallowed much?
Yes.
It's all right now. Just hold on to my shoulders. Soon have you out. Two. There. I'm standing up. Put your arms around my neck. That's it. I'll carry you out. Oh, here we are. Terra firma. Oh. Now, let's get out of these shadows and into the sun.
Put me down, please. Oh,
I have no intention of putting you down. If I got you out of the Danube, I have a right to hold you in my arms.
Please.
Why?
Because I'm married, that's why.
Oh, never.
Put me down.
And which school is your husband in? Which form?
He's an architect. He's in charge of the reconstruction work here in St. Anne. I came down for a swim. I got cramp in the leg. And now will you please put me down?
Are you really a grown-up?
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Oh, I'm sorry. Honestly, I thought you were just a student.
I said I was married.
Oh, and in that case, I'll put you down.
Thank you. Lucky you were passing here when I began to go under.
Wasn't it?
But now you'd better go home and change. You're soaking wet.
It doesn't matter. I'm okay.
Then thank you again. And goodbye.
Your husband's an architect, did you say? How old is he?
32.
And you?
18.
18?
Yes.
You're really 18, then I'll introduce myself, just as I am, covered in weeds.
What?
You say your name, too, just as you are, in shoes and gown.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, come off it. Just say, thanks, Francis, for saving my life.
Oh. I turned my back on him. Left him high and dry, ran up the bank, and never looked back till I reached our house. But all the way home, I could hear his voice saying...
I'll introduce myself, just as I am, covered in weeds.
Saying...
Just say, thanks, Francis, for saving my life.
But I said nothing. He did save my life, of course. Nothing much really happened. The poor boy fell in love with me as he was trying to save my life. Can't blame him, I suppose. Although perhaps I shouldn't think up excuses for him. Anyway, I had every reason to hurry back to John, who'd been my husband for 6 months. My sure and healthy instincts led me back. Yes, my fidelity was running like a well-oiled bicycle, and I pedaled away on it back to my husband. Of course, it wasn't always as simple as that. The second fidelity of my life was a much nearer thing than the first. I was 24. John had gone to some congress, as usual. I can't remember where. Anyway, I was alone at home again, feeling terribly depressed. When suddenly, this restlessness came over me, so I decided to go out. I found myself at the zoo. Why, in the zoo of all places? Why in the zoo?
If you'll pardon me, I can tell you. Your childhood memories have brought you here.
These words were spoken by a man wearing a check coat. I glanced at him in amazement. How could he read my thoughts?
As you put the question rather loudly, it wasn't difficult.
He smiled as he said this. And later on, in front of the lion's den, he said...
Look how afraid and sly that lion looks. I wonder who it was who first said that the lion was brave, who invented the notion of courage at all.
Why? Do you think there are no courageous beings?
The world's held together by cowards.
Are you a coward?
Of course.
How do you know?
Well, I never do what I'd like to do. If I had the slightest courage, I'd tell you all about myself and end up by confessing my love for you right here. But I can't even pluck up enough courage because, well, I'm an even worse coward than the lion.
I looked at the stranger in the check coat. He was certainly better looking than my John. For one thing, he was taller. And his profile was stronger. Also, his voice was more pleasant. I mean, John would have said...
But I can't pluck up enough courage, because I'm an even worse coward than the lion.
Yes, that's how John would have said it. But the man said it like this.
But I can't even pluck up enough courage, because I'm an even worse coward than the lion.
Could two things be more different? But does it make any difference if one is faithful to one's husband? As a matter of fact, I don't think the man meant his love. Because if someone as manly as he was, and having such a voice...
I'm an even worse coward than the lion.
Well, what I mean is, if he really meant he was in love, he'd certainly have tried to kiss me. What am I talking about? As if I'd let him. Never. There's no better feeling for a woman than to keep her fidelity. It's like taking a shower on a sultry day. One just stands under one's fidelity and lets its cooling, bracing shower run down one's body. Gorgeous. What problems a faithful woman has. The easy women have an easy time. They simply deceive their husbands and that's the end of it. But here we are. The poor faithful who get no sympathy or understanding from anyone. That's the bitter truth. No one takes any interest in the faithful woman. Neither the Women's Guild, the trade unions, or the government. We're never on the agenda. We work away at our fidelity while the others have their fun in the limelight. The telephone. Maybe they've taken notice of me after all. Perhaps the President of the Republic wants to convey his best wishes on the occasion of the 18th anniversary of my relentless fidelity. Hello?
Eating's Women's Hairdressing Shop?
No, this is not the 18th Women's Hairdressing Shop. Wrong number. Damn. Now I can't think of what my next fidelity was at the moment. No wonder, really. There have been so many. The first was the lifesaver. The second, the man in the zoo. The third... Ah, yes. The third... Hosanna, Hosanna. The third one I met in the Matthias Church. It was a Saturday afternoon in January. My husband was taking me for a drive in the Castle District. The music and the whole gay winter atmosphere cast their spell over me, and I went inside the church. John remained outside in the square because he noticed some architectural fault about the reconstruction work that was going on the church. Up in the choir, the singers and the soloists were rehearsing a Bach Mass for the following Sunday. I was standing by a pillar, looking at the peeling walls and the ragged church banners, when suddenly I became conscious of a man's voice beside me.
Anne.
I turned towards the voice in surprise.
Anne, don't you recognize me?
Sorry, but I don't. I looked up at the tall, masculine figure.
We played tennis in the same club 10 years ago. I was an undergraduate. I'm a doctor now, gynecologist. Stephen Mullick.
Of course I remember you now. But you wore a moustache in those days, didn't you?
I stopped growing it. But if you're interested to hear more about me, let's go outside and while we're taking a stroll, we can talk.
Impossible. My husband is waiting for me outside.
Pity.
Pity. I said too, out of politeness, and added, I must go now. It was nice to see you again. Goodbye.
I'm sorry you have to go. It's my day off, and it would have been nice to have a chat with a woman after so many women.
Cheerio.
You know, I'm a lonely person, but since we met, I...
Goodbye.
Aren't you glad we met by any chance?
Yes, but...
If only you understood what it means to me.
Please, let go of my hand.
Forgive me. Goodbye, then. And my regards to your husband, and I'll be waiting for you at this pillar the same time tomorrow afternoon.
I hurried out of the church, put my arm through John's, and forgot the whole affair with Stephen Marlick. Did I say forgot? When we sat in the car and John said...
You were ages. I almost froze stiff waiting outside the church.
I thought that's the kind of man John is. Somehow he always manages to express himself so meanly. And I thought something else, too. That if Stephen were my husband, he certainly would have been much kinder to me. Like this.
Anne, how well everything suits you. Until now, I've only noticed how well your new hat and little boots become. Now I realize the church becomes you, too.
But that is not all. When the same night John put his arms round my waist at the window and said...
Look, it seems as if the whole street is covered with icing sugar.
Really? Icing sugar. What an ordinary imagination John has. Stephen would certainly have expressed himself more poetically.
Look, it seems as if the whole street was thronging with white gulls.
No, he can do better than that.
Look, it's as if the whole street had been carved of glittering white marble by a lonely sculptor.
That's better. And I went on comparing the two men. John pulled me close and began to kiss me.
Darling.
Your lips, he whispered, are...
Like red cherries.
Such cliches, I thought to myself. I could already hear Stephen's voice.
Your lips are like the summer with the sun's warmth on them.
At that moment, I pulled myself up. The simile was easily better than John's, no denying it. But I told myself firmly that I couldn't carry on thinking like this. Fidelity is not a thing to play with. Fidelity is fidelity, which leaves no room for compromise. Once you've set out on the path of fidelity, there's no halfway house. In my imagination, I indicated the door to Stephen Marlick. Go, Stephen, I said in a tone that left him no leeway. And he took himself off. There are women who dream all their lives about deception. Of course, they're not naturally faithful. And if they don't cheat their husbands, it's out of sheer despair. They are the ones who nag. Of course, these faithful saints are all the more debauched in their dreams. If I were like that, I'd detest myself. But I'm faithful to my husband in my dreams, too. Though Julius Caesar once wanted to possess me. He came, he saw, but conquer could he not. Oh, it was a terrific dream. He began his siege, the man who had conquered the whole world, and I was the last thing left to conquer. He was speaking hot words under his breath in an excellent translation from the original Latin. I was drumming with all my might on his brawny body, and with the greatest possible strength of mind, I said, let go, Caesar. You have a wife, be sensible, please, I said. I grew quite familiar with him in my dreams. Please let me alone. I won't cheat my husband, I won't. I was shouting all this in Latin. This shows what a woman is capable of if she is faithful. Caesar never lost a battle, he cried, and lifted me up in his arms. I kicked, I clawed, I bit, but he didn't bat an eyelid. He just smiled and said, never a battle so important, never victory so sweet. He held me in his arms like two steel clasps. He bent over me and wanted to kiss my lips. Then he cried out even more passionately than before and said, speak. Which country shall I conquer for you? Which dominion shall I make you queen of, so that you may be mine? I didn't answer. I kept silent and proud. What woman has ever had such a price offered her? And what woman could resist? I, for one, resisted stoutly. My fidelity proved a match for the man who had the whole world groveling at his feet. But I had dreams of other celebrated men, too.
But soft! What light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun.
Yes, I had a dream of Shakespeare, no less. He wanted the same thing as Caesar. When I told him that I was faithful to my husband, he made an innocent face, and without further ado launched into a monologue. There's no fidelity greater and truer than thine, Anne, and I shall ever regard thee as faithful, even though it be but a mask, even if thou shouldst once prove frail. He spoke in this fashion for a while. Then, warming to the task, embraced me. I resisted once again. Immortality counts nothing with me. So I started drumming on his body like I did on Caesar's. He was astonished I had no respect for his being a classic. He thought I'd be his mistress out of pure love for literature. He was mistaken. I chose John between John and Shakespeare. I know this is a bit hard to understand. Even John found it so. I know, because when I told him about my dream next morning, he said,
"You're a marvellous woman, Anne, but to be quite frank, you baffle me. I suppose it's no new thing to you if I say that I could never think of any other woman but you. Still, if Cleopatra should offer herself to me in a dream, well, I don't know if I could resist the temptation."
I was very disappointed, if only because I had previously resisted Caesar. This was the first time that I felt John didn't understand me. It hurt me what he said about Cleopatra. It was so vulgar. All the same, I continued to love John just as I had done before. And I never had second thoughts about William Shakespeare. For me, fidelity is the only modern way of life. Hello?
Hello, 18th Woman's Hairdressing Shop?
No, this is not the hairdressing shop.
Lasted.
What?
Oh, I do beg your pardon, but can you imagine that whenever I ring up the 18th Woman's Hairdressing Shop, it's either busy or when it isn't, I'm put through to all sorts of private flats.
This is a private flat, and it's the second time you've dialed the wrong number.
You see, I'm trying to call my wife.
No.
She's a hairdresser and works at the 18th Hairdressing Shop.
I see.
She's one of the best workers in the trade and has been twice decorated for good work.
I'm glad to hear you're so proud of her.
Of course I'm proud of her. She's the most lovable creature in the world. Oh, and so beautiful. Pity I can't show you a photograph of her on the phone.
How long have you been married?
10 years.
Oh.
And we've been in love for 10 years. But I really must apologize for disturbing you.
Not at all. Let me congratulate you on a happy marriage.
Thank you.
You see, I'm happily married, too.
Isn't that marvelous?
Yes.
Two happy people meeting by accident on a telephone line. Two people who know the secret of happiness.
Well, I don't know if we understand the same thing by the secret of happiness.
If I told you my secret, you'd laugh. I think I'm quite unique. The secret of my happiness is, please don't laugh, that I'm faithful to my wife.
I'm not laughing.
No?
No. And if we're now talking to each other as two strangers, I can tell you in return that my secret is just the same.
Incredible. Marvelous. What a fantastic coincidence.
Isn't it?
Yes. I've been married 10 years.
Oh.
By the way, I'm 30. How long have you been married?
Me?
Yes.
5 years.
Well, that's a nice long time, too.
Yes.
5 years of fidelity.
Yes.
Well, that's something, especially when a woman's so young. You don't sound more than 25.
29.
Marvelous. Well, may I wish you every happiness for the future.
Thank you.
By the way, it's just occurred to me, my wife works till 9.
Oh.
Now I'm going down to the Fountain Coffee Bar.
Yes.
If you like the idea, drop in for half an hour. You could carry on this conversation there.
But
you'll recognize me by the fact that I'll be reading Hemingway. Can you come down?
No. I don't know.
Well, if you don't come, let me once more wish you the best of luck in everything. Goodbye, then, or better still, I'll be seeing you.
Goodbye. Till then. What a nice, enthusiastic man. And he thinks just like me. How odd. A strange man asks me for a date. Two faithful persons sit down for a chat in a coffee bar. Why shouldn't I go? Besides, I'm curious to see the man face to face. The man who's got the same mind as me, has the same way of thinking as me. I'll go. Yes! I'm longing for the moment when I can face him. How much more exciting it is for a woman to stay faithful. Adultery is so boring.
I'll introduce myself just as I am, covered in weeds.
I tell you all about myself and end up confessing my love. I'll be waiting for you at this pillar the same time tomorrow afternoon.
Never a battle so important. Never victory so sweet.
Yes, yes, I must go. Mustn't back out. At least I'll be able to look danger in the face. For you, John. See, I'm not afraid of temptation in your absence. Yes, my dear, you can rest assured. At this moment, when you're stepping out of the plane at Stockholm Airport, your wife, who knows that the single meaning of her life is that she is faithful to you, goes off to a date. Thank you that I can again be faithful to you, John, my darling. Thank you that I can again taste the water of the spring of fidelity. Oh, thank you.
That was Geraldine McEwan in Trials of Fidelity by Miklos Jarfos. It was translated from the Hungarian by Laszlo András. This radio adaptation by Jerry Jones was produced by John Tideman.